Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. It's a bank holiday special. It's coming live and direct from New York City. What do you think, Kev? When was the last time you were here? I mean, it's probably about 8 years since I've been here, and it certainly seems like it's a changing city.
It was 12 years ago, I think, at least, since I've been here. 2000, maybe longer, actually, to be honest. But we were at the Ground Zero Memorial and Museum this morning. Yeah, quite poignant, and certainly the water's pool, if any of you have been, it's really quite amazing, really touching. That the actual buildings were exactly where the buildings were. They've created waterfalls, and then it goes down about five stories, the waterfall.
Designed by an Israeli guy as well, apparently. So it was an open submission, wasn't it, that you could submit your entries into the design of what would replace effectively the footprint of the North and the South Tower. And an Israeli designer won it, and his design came to fruition. So it is actually it's remarkable, with all the names around the side as well. It's sort of people who perished that day, and then there's a white rose inserted into some of the names that indicates obviously that it was that person's birthday. So very touching, sobering, but all the world. So Zach, how have you been? I think we've seen your famous. We went to see the charged bull down on Wall Street there. I think you've had a picture taken with it. But what are your thoughts on New York?
That was me in Pamplona in Spain. That was the running of the bulls.
Oh, was it? So it wasn't. That was the proper Spanish bull. That one. Have you ever done that? The bull run. Do you think you're quick enough to outrun that bull?
It's the reality is, if you live there as I did for a few years, it's not quite the same. Well, although it's 1 week of a complete piss up, basically, in the most of the day, and then in the evening they have the running, they have the sort of the bullfighting, but in the morning the bulls go from the place where they're kept through the streets, and it's very slippery. It's around 8 o'clock in the morning. It's always really slippery in the sort of cobblestones, so unless you really know what you're doing. And also if you've been drinking the whole night before, those are the people who tend to be there. So it's the sort of thing that you and Kevin would do.
They are literally bull fodder, because they're the ones
obviously 30 years ago you would have done that. And stayed up all night, and then running with the bulls at 8 o'clock in the morning. And the main casualties are always, the Irish, the Australians, the South Africans, Americans, that kind of thing. So you would have been perfect for that, I think.
That's a compliment or an insult, to be honest.
Up your ass.
Yeah, and so I obviously didn't. I thought that I would be number one on the casualties list, so I would just sort of stand on a balcony window looking at the events. But it's too early for me. It was just too early in the day, 8 o'clock in the morning. Can't be bothered, really. So there we are.
And New York, have you been?
No, the only time I've been to America was to Los Angeles in 1991, when I thought I was going to get a broking job at Dean Witter.
Right.
And I was so keen, because I sort of said goodbye to everybody, thinking that I'd get the job, cause so long, suckers, and everything else, I'll be on Malibu Beach.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, at that time, the two factors, one, my social skills weren't what they are now, so you can imagine what I was like. And number two, I was so keen. I didn't care about the jet lag. So I probably arrived there, I went some sort of, let's say I'd arrived there at 11 o'clock at night. And and I was actually doing the interview at the equivalent of 3 o'clock in the morning or something like that. So I didn't know anything. I didn't know whether it was day or night, literally like that. And then they also asked me to do all these sort of psychometric tests. So there was, like in mathematics, and then do a computerized phone call. And I literally couldn't even say my name. So that was that. So 1 week later, I came back. End of my, but I took a selfie of myself on Malibu, which obviously in those days was a bit more of a challenge than it is now. I was the only person wearing normal clothes, and everybody else was doing what they do on Malibu as well. So I was completely completely strange. And then I'd hired a car and I drove around LA. Obviously, that was before GPS. Highlight of that was going the wrong way down a freeway.
Brilliant.
I'm living to tell the tale and not getting arrested or shot or anything else.
Is this the same guy as the CEO of a new company?
Yeah. I had a great time. I had absolutely great time because it was just like, you know, I would leave the hotel and magically I'd managed to find my way back by the end of the day after driving like 10 hours around the city or whatever I was doing. So I had a great time.
Wow.
Got parking tickets everywhere, but it was apart from that, it was a good trip. So
excellent.
That was my America.
So I saw you Wednesday, obviously the launch party or the pre-launch party for Lyft Global Ventures. So obviously that went live on Friday. Congratulations. How does it feel to finally get that lifted off the ground? Pardon the pun.
Well, it was, door to door, it was a 1-year process. And it was through all the, you know, the pandemic and Ukraine and everything else. It was through all the paperwork and the lawyers, accountants and everything else. I have to say that it's not exactly a cookie cutter approach there. You know, you, literally every company starts from scratch and all everything, you know, goes like that. So that was something which was interesting, and obviously getting the, you know, the investors together on the seed round and then the IPO and everything else. And so it's been a lot of work, and I just actually feel you know, as soon as the stock hit the market at, you know, at 8 o'clock on Friday, it was just almost, I'm sure it's one of those things when people, I'm not saying this is the equivalent of climbing Mount Everest, but you know what I mean? You just have that sort of all that nervous exhaustion that you've had and all that effort you made over many months. You just, you know, you sort of, you almost like puncture like a balloon. You're exhausted. And you know, I've actually slept 12 hours on one of the nights. I don't actually know which night it was, but you know, something like that. And I normally like might sleep 3 or 4, you know, and I get away with it. So
it's a relief thing. I suppose.
Yeah,
I was going to say, I think that I saw it on Friday, obviously, and I think there's only sort of 4 or 5 trades. And obviously that's kind of indicative of the fact that it is a new, you know, it's a newly listed stock, and there's a lot of brokers that probably didn't have the kind of the full electronic trading, you know, system set up. So I think sort of next week, obviously we've got with bank holiday today, sort of at Tuesday, then, you know, they should see more availability on across the platforms.
Yeah, it's one of those things, I suppose, you know, if you're keen and you want to get into the stock, you'll do it. But it's not something that's just going to happen by accident. So, you know, you have to, if you're a professional investor, I mean, I would know how to buy, you know, stock in Aquis because, you know, I've got a decent stockbroker. But as I said, it's just something that you've got to, if you're keen, you do it. If you're not keen, then you buy shares in BP. You know, that's the alternative. So make the choice.
So how else was the week? I mean, There was a CDL RNS that came out. It was Foggy Mountain that looked quite good. Anything? Any other standout moments for you last week, Zach?
I kind of remember last week now. So
I'm not surprised after Wednesday, to be honest. I can't really remember.
I might have to check up. I mean, literally, I'll have to check up what the I did a, you know, one of my bulletin board heroes on the day that we're speaking. There's a few good stocks there. I thought. You've interviewed Tech Minerals, and so that had a good end to the week. The other one, which is always interesting, I suppose, is Vast Resources, which actually had one of its rare bounces. But I think it was Friday was unbelievably quiet. I think, you know, literally everybody just said, you know, it's a holiday on Monday, thank you very much and goodbye. But the other part of the week, I was obviously focused on my day job.
So now, Zach, you've got Lyft off the ground. You're going to start looking at opportunities. So that process is going to start next week, I take it?
Yes, it'll start pretty soon. I was going to say, you know, now that the easy 1-year pre-listing process is finished, now we can go for the even easier, let's try and find the investment process. But as you know, it's all really tough. And I think if somebody like me who speaks to CEOs all the time, as you do now as well, you know that people, you know, you have to come up with something very special. You have to run to stand still. And, you know, with 2 million in cash, you've got to really make it count.
So one thing we did this week, just moving forward, is we obviously went to Conroy Gold as part of our kind of whistle stop tour. We went to flew into Dublin, had a night there, and then we met Professor Conroy and Maureen on the Friday, and we actually visited Clontibret and Clay Lake and saw the core sheds there, where they literally put the cores almost in a library with all the hole numbers and all the samples and all the kind of like the points on there within the core rooms. Had a look at that, had a look at some XRF, had a presentation with them, and they made us feel very welcome. It was actually quite interesting to see it actually in front of you, and how vast it all seems. I don't know what you thought of it, Kev, but it certainly seems like it's all coming together now.
Yeah, no, it was a very good experience. Obviously, you're in the Irish countryside with rolling hills and lots of green grass and cows eating the grass and nice little streams and all the rest of it. But when we actually viewed the sort of the area, and we only viewed two potential targets in Clontibret, which already has the 500-ounce York report on it, and all of that land is owned. There's a farmhouse there, and they own all of that land, and they're now stepping that out. And they will be stepping that out. And they've only gone to 200 meters as well in terms of depth as well. So I just see the opportunity in terms of that is just absolutely vast. What you have to understand is this type of gold is in the bedrock. So they hit the bedrock, they bring the bedrock up, and then it goes for analysis of how much gold there is. So we were seeing bedrock there with 30, 31 grams per ton, which obviously in the gold parlance is just huge amounts of gold. But on average, certainly, it should be 2 grams plus of gold across Clontibret anyway. And Clay Lake, I think, is a little bit higher as well. Yeah, I mean, I'm basically writing something in a minute, which is like, what could possibly go wrong? You know, what are the things that could go wrong? And I don't see a lot. I mean, obviously, there are opportunities for things to not work out, but the gold is there. Okay, so it's a case of how does this work in terms of open pit and shafts and so on and so forth as it goes forward. There can't be a problem with funding now. Signed, sealed, and delivered that Demir Export are basically paying for everything from this point on until we get mine ready. So, you know, what can go wrong? The gold's there. The JORC report says the gold's there. Even based on that JORC report, the company's worth 4 or 5 times what it is now, at least. So, yeah, it was a very interesting day, like, to see it in the real. Me and Phil put the wellies on and tromped down to the stream, which is where the bedrock outcrops, and we were smashing the rock off to see literally the glittering, not gold, because it's encased in, what was it, Phil? It was encased in like a pyrite, and then there's gold inside that pyrite. So it's tiny, tiny flecks, basically. But, you know, it was a sunny day when we were there, and you could move the rock, and it was literally glistening, you know, with the gold. So, yeah, I mean, I'm very excited. I think it's not maybe going to happen overnight, but we were just joking about like the share price and what it could actually be if they get, you know, 4 million, 6 million, 8 million, 10 million ounces of gold from this over the next number of years. And it's just frightening to even consider it. Like, unbelievable.
Yeah, there's so few shares in issue that it will move fast, and it will, you know, a £2 valuation, you know, wouldn't be a massive market cap really for the resources. So it does look good, and it's just it's when the market kind of wakes up to it. I suppose, you know, once the drilling starts in earnest, and you know, we start seeing those different stages of the JV satisfied, then hopefully the market will wake up to it. So it just definitely looks like a compelling one. One that I want to move on to, we talked about this on the last one, was Zach talked about it as well, was Empyrean Energy, EME, which had unfortunately had a what the industry refers to as a duster. Unfortunately, there was no oil shows. and the share price dropped about 80%, sadly, on that, you know, on that announcement. Now, Zach had already mentioned, I think, compared them, the usual, you know, the oil and gas exploration, ADV Energy was one, wasn't it, that did a similar sort of thing earlier in the year. And there's a lot of investors who unfortunately got caught out on that one and lost a lot of money. So seeing it again, it's never easy, is it? It's a bitter pill to swallow. What are your thoughts on that one, Zach?
I think that I probably, if there hadn't been ADV and I hadn't seen a lot of, you know, clever people, you know, lose money on that one, I probably would have been much more keen on Empyrean. And so it was, you know, if it, you know, because you sort of these things happen every, I suppose, what is it, once a year, twice a year, something like that, in the sense of these, you know, or maybe every other year, something like that. But anyway, you know what I'm saying? It was just so soon after ADV that, even though, you know, the chart looked great and the company looked great and it was like, even if they don't make it, it'll be fine and all that stuff, it was one of those things that, you know, and also you can normally tell when it's a bit dangerous when if you say that it could be a duster, you know, people look at you in horror.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. So
it was a difficult one because they read, like the previous RNS to the announcement, they'd obviously raised the chances of success, didn't they, on the Jade drilling update, saying that the chance of success had increased to something like 60%, 41 to 65%. So that kind of like obviously pulled people in and said, based on the results thus far, they've upgraded the internal geological chance of success to 65, which I've been told
from, you know, this is before ADV and before Empyrean, that it's never more than 1 in 3. It doesn't matter whether it's Shell, you know, Standard Oil, it doesn't matter who it is, Red Adair, I don't know, whoever, you know, I mean, literally, it doesn't matter who it is, it's never more than 1 in 3. And just for future record, it's never more than 1 in 3. The fact that they actually raised it from effectively 1 in 3 or just over was, that was the, in a way, the bad bit.
Yeah, so it's, they just
kept them, if they kept the mouth shut, it would have been just say it was 1 in 3, and that's that.
So do you think
the negative side of it, Phil, really was that the share price probably dropped about 25% the day before, and there was the big volume the day before, and then the RNS came out the next morning, so
it was leaky, very leaky, that one, for sure.
Bit of dissatisfaction over that, I think. But I mean, I said it last week, I think, on the Sunday roast, that I think it's way overdone. Because the gas asset that they have, the Jungen or however you pronounce it, I think it's in Indonesia. It's worth 5 to 6p all day long at the low end, and it's there and it's proven up. So at 2.5p now, I think you know, I see it as a bargain. I think I really do. It's now in bargain territory.
No, but it may be a bargain, but then the problem with that, with situations like that, is that when the seller said it's a bargain, if you're in there, you're just competing against all the people who are in at 10p or 9p who are getting out. So there's such a lot of, volume to get out of there first, or a lot of sellers to get out of there first before it's actually going to go up, even if it is worth 5 or 6p.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think ADV Energy hasn't really recovered massively, has it, from that massive dump? Because people are burnt. I mean, the thing I look at is how much of this was priced in. Probably not a lot in terms of the J prospect alone and even Topaz. But what I'm trying to say is, at what point does the risk reward kind of like even itself out? So it's dropped 80% on a duster. If it had hit the mother load, would it have done 80% the other way? I'm not convinced in this market it would. So is it worth the risk of having your money on the table when you said it's probably a third chance of success? Is it worth that, the risk, weighing it up, probability, losing 80%? Are you going to gain 80%? I just don't think the risk reward is there.
I think it's never nice anyway when you're waiting on something. This is the thing that you should never, I mean, it seems to be the thing not to do, that you're waiting for an event, either it's a takeover or a drill result or something like that. Whenever you're in that sort of situation, I just think, you know, it's better just to be better just take whatever money you've got and wait, and then, you know, it might double, but normally
I think the key is to ride the anticipation on oilers as they move up pre-drilling before the result, get out before the news. So don't sell on news because you can't wait for that. But as you say, it's just too binary, isn't it? The whole thing is a binary bet.
And even if you de-risked, I mean, it went down so much, you'd be upset as well. So absolutely, you know, it just hasn't been, you know,
it's not pleasant because it takes a lot of liquidity out of the market, doesn't it? When you see that, you know, people don't want to go back into stocks, do they? And then, some might cut the losses, but I hate seeing private investors, retail investors getting, you know, it's never a pleasant thing to see.
I mean, there's quite a few of the, I don't know, I can't remember, is Synergen one of those as well? There's been a few which have, pull the rug. I think luckily Angle came back, which is good.
Yeah.
But in general, it's painful, and there's been more and more of these, I think, you know, one way or the other.
I mean, Chill was one recently that got a lot of procrastination and caused disquiet, didn't it, on the social media, the raise, obviously. But it has actually recovered. I think it recovered to 3.5p and finished around about 3.1 on the last session. So I'm not quite sure why it's getting, obviously there's a big dilutory thing going on there, but what are your thoughts on Chill?
My thoughts of what they have been since the start of this episode, just let Callum get on with the job and give him time to get on with the job. So, you know, I'm very much with the allies on this. And I tend to be anyway. I mean, just, you know, historically, I think, you know, especially with somebody new, give the man a chance. If it's somebody who's old and has failed many times, then maybe not, I don't want to give the person a chance. But I think in this case, you know, just let him get on with the job and whatever he wants to do.
It's like saying, I'm going to buy something. I mean, it's obvious that this is coming now from Nick Tulloch. From what's the name of the company now he's dealing with, who was involved with Chill or what was Zoetic a while back, and he left Chill after taking it from HNR and then Chill. So I think the scenario is the deal is struck with Optiva. It's been done. The raise has been done. Has to be approved by the shareholders. And now someone else comes along and says, oh, I can give you a slightly better deal. And the deal's already been done. So it sort of seems to me a bit like crying after spilt milk. The reality of the situation is Chill needs cash. If it doesn't have cash, it's out of business. So quite obviously it needs to raise money. It's raised its money and it moves on with Callum and the many ideas he has to monetize the different things it has. It's obviously been a pretty disastrous situation with the previous two CEOs in terms of them being able to take this business into a position of revenue and profitability. But I don't see that same situation with Callum because he doesn't suffer fools gladly. And, you know, he set out to sort this out. And he's been on board for about 15 months, basically advising and showing them what they should do, but they haven't been doing it. Now he has the opportunity to do it. So I think it's a good sign. They've raised to 2p. It's sitting at over 3p already. And I think there's many potential. You've got how much is chill.com actually worth? You know, probably worth more than the market cap of the company right now, to be honest. You've got going back all the way to these, the seeds that they had. They have 3 million feminized seeds, which go for between $1 and $3 a seed. And there's stuff to come out about how sort of approved they are in the future. And then there's all the product lines that they've got, you know. So we actually landed here in America, and Callum was nice enough to send us a box of all the stuff that they've got. So it's interesting stuff. I think it's still if, but, and maybe. But I really do think that it's got a chance now. And before, it obviously didn't have a chance, but we didn't know it didn't have a chance.
What would happen if this vote went the other way and, you know, this deal was voted down? What do you think is that?
I think it's almost impossible it's going to be voted down. It needs 80% or something to be voted down, I think. But yeah, if it is voted down, then obviously you got to go to plan B and see what is offered. But I don't think it's going to be voted down, Zach, to be honest. All the shareholders that already were shareholders, or a lot of them, have partaken in this raise. So what are they going to do? You know, I openly have already said on the interviews as well, I'm a fairly large shareholder. I've voted yes for it, and I think many of them are doing the same thing. So
we will see. Don't like the dilution, but at the same time, I don't think we have much choice. Got to get on with it and give Callum and the other people involved a chance to make this work.
And just finally, what's the motivation for not going with Callum?
Well, who's going to benefit from the other deal? It's basically going to be the people involved in that other deal are going to financially benefit. As simple as that. It's not. Do you think they're doing it because they love Chill?
No, not at all. Do you?
No, I mean,
not a chance.
It's purely financially driven because right now, Chill.com and Chill as a company with what it has undervalued for what it's got. You know, whether you count the Chill.com domain name, the feminized seeds, the products that it has, even if we're not getting a great deal of revenue from them, the 500 or 600 shops that it's in the US and selling through with good sell rates. This has all got to be worth more than what it's currently worth, which is what, £6-8 million?
All right, moving on, there's a couple that EML had a good week, didn't it? I think it was up to like 9.1 or 9.2. We talked about that one briefly, the potash play in Morocco. Certainly, I think you've charted that one as well, Zach.
I thought that was a real sort of almost uplifting type of situation. It's taken so long. I know there's a lot of really patient shareholders in there. Yeah. And normally when you have to wait too long, it's not a good sign, as we were saying with the other companies. But this time, looks like it's the right stock at the right time. They're in the right, they've done all their sort of admin that they've had to do for the Morocco people, and with the fertilizer crisis that we've got, I think crops is up as well. It's a real fertilizer crisis now. They're right in the box seat. before you would say, fertilizers, who cares? But now this is really, almost like life and death, but not far off. So great position. And I think it should probably be much higher than it is. And it's still a mystery why the shares are, there are too many shares around, or people haven't really got onto it. But great situation, I think.
Perfect. And then there was Mila Resources as well. We touched on that. I think I had a good week, up 10% on the last session, probably up something like 50-60%. In the last 5 days session. It looks good. We've interviewed Neil Hutchison, the geologist. It looks good, doesn't it? It looks like they're finding very good grades, sort of almost bonanza grades, very close to the Bellevue prospect, which is next door, one of the big majors or the mid-tier mining companies. So certainly one to watch, that one.
Yeah, for sure. I think Miller Resources is gonna do extremely well. To be honest, I mean, if these drill results keep coming in the way and the size they're gonna do, they're probably gonna smash the original 250. And then I think the geologist was hoping for 500,000 ounces, but based on the grades he's talking about now, we could be smashing that as well. So yeah. It's definitely looks pretty good. I think there was some good news also for Hydrogen Utopia as well, wasn't it? That island thing as well.
There was an investment in the plastic waste to wax, wasn't there? And then there was a kind of like a partnership to team up investment. It looked good. What are your thoughts on that one, Zach?
Yeah, I think it's sort of jump starts, but it accelerates. What they're doing. I think from what I know, wax and plastic waste to wax is an easier thing to do. It's a much more proven thing to do, if that makes any sense. Much more proven, they've got they'll instantly have boots on the ground and their own sort of gig, their own place, their own location. So again, it means that they've got an HQ in the EU and really to lap up any grants and other stuff that the EU gives as well.
So do you think there's been a bit of a sign of almost not a U-turn, but a change in tact? Because obviously originally we were under the impression that it was going to be in Konin in Poland that was going to be the kind of the first of a kind. But I think in the last RNS it said that this new agreement with Trifol Resources in the Republic of Ireland, they anticipate it leading to its first fully operational full-scale waste plastic to hydrogen facility in Europe. Do you think that's the case now, that they see this as being the FOAK, as you say, the first of a kind?
Yeah, this is quicker, so it'll trump it, I suppose, I'm guessing it'll trump it by about 6 months or something like that. And given the way that I can only imagine that the reason the HUI shares are sort of roughly where they floated, even though we've got this massive you know, renewable energy crisis, or you know the gas issue and the whole Ukraine thing should make anything in the renewable space massively more attractive and valuable. The whole thing here is that we can see some sort of light on production, whether it's wax or hydrogen or any, you know, or syngas. HUI should be off to the races. So I think that's where we're positioned for HUI now. But you know, I just think people should be just saying that anything which is non-fossil fuels is, they should be jumping on it. Sure. But they're not.
No, they're not. The other one, what about SNT? I think Sabian Technology, they're in the kind of like the heating sector. What are your thoughts on that? I had a really good session. Yeah, I think it's up by, I don't know, 15-20% in the last week or two. Corporate update, they got a contract win, I believe, last week in the CO2 emission space. And 264,000 contract with the UK government department. And it certainly looks like it's, you know, liquidity is coming back in the market. And there's not many shares in issue, because I think they had a consolidation of probably 6 months to a year ago now. So there's sub 4 million cap with 14.7 million shares in issue. And I think the director there has been buying a lot of stock from Richard Paris is the executive chairman. He's been, I think he's bought up to something like £500,000 of the stock in there. So any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I saw. I mean, he's been buying. I think he was buying from a very low level before. Let's say, you know, let's say it was equivalent of 10p or something like that. So the man's very keen, and this seems to be a clever company. From the one or two investors I know are in it are like, they don't suffer. You know, they know what they're doing. They don't suffer fools gladly. So it looks like it's got, you know, that sort of box tick on there. The only thing which is, I suppose when I looked at it, I thought 264 grand, well, that's not very much. But it looks as though the slack has been taken up in the stock anyway. So I think it's finally time. It's about 6 months late from memory. But I think it's finally time for the thing to start moving. And sure. The chart looks much more encouraging now, even though obviously this is just a micro cap with what can be a misleading chart.
Sure, yeah.
The other two that I'm thinking of, partly because I read the Times article that came out regarding how China basically sewed up all the metals that they needed probably a number of years ago. But one of the charts in that particular article shows that graphite is 100% controlled by China. 100% of all graphite is in Chinese hands. So how on earth Blenco, for one, and also SVML, Sovereign Metals, is as low as they are under those situations? Basically, America and Europe have only got these resources that will come online to go for. So it's absolutely mind-blowing that they haven't reacted so far.
Well, that's always the opportunity, those non-reacting situations. I suppose it makes you think, how the hell did they get those Blenco and Sovereign get those assets and the Chinese didn't?
Yeah, well, you have to ask yourself, don't they? But they've got them, haven't they? And they're both in Africa, which the Chinese have basically nearly taken over, you know. So one being, I think, in Uganda and the other one is in Mali, I think it is. So yeah, I think
the problem is that the market just doesn't really, even, well, at least here, doesn't understand graphite, doesn't understand how important it is, doesn't get it. It might get lithium a bit, but graphite, I think it's literally, maybe things they put them in pencils or something. I mean, literally nothing. Yeah. I think so far compared to what it should be, there is no understanding at all. And you've got to, you know, point the finger at the CEOs for not explaining that to the people.
Yeah, I think it's that. It's also, it will have its day in the sun, as you say, and I think it will see value. People realise that it's used 100% of the cathode. So ultimately, it has its uses. And as Kev says, the fact is 100% of it is controlled by the Chinese. So, you know, what the White House came out a few months ago and said, we are 400% down on the amount we need. You know, basically there's going to be a 400% increase in demand for it. So even they're recognizing that the politicians and the US in the White House. So ultimately the demand has increased and there's just is a deficit. There's a big shortfall. So they're going to look in their own countries, but they're also obviously going to have to look elsewhere for it. So talking of US-based companies that are, you know, in that sort of in a similar sector, you know, graphite type play, but Metcoal, we're going to hire a car in the morning, Kev, and drive down to West Virginia to see Ben's Creek. We're excited about that one.
West Virginia, Mountain Mama, take me home, country roads. Yes, and Phil had to get us a
wrong key and wrong lyrics.
Wrong lyrics. Yeah, well done.
It was just like, apart from West Virginia, everything's complete. Well, anyway, you made up your own new song. It's great.
Yeah,
it's great. Absolutely. And we're going down in a Range Rover or something, so Phil has to have the fancy car to take us down there. So we're all looking forward to it. Bought the Pringles. Got to get a few drinks and a few chocolate bars, and we're ready to rock and roll. We're actually going to see Biden anyway tomorrow in the White House, and then we'll. And I think Philly cheesesteaks on the way through Philadelphia as well for lunch, and then we're going to see Biden, and then we'll stop somewhere around Washington for the night, and then we'll head to Charlestown, I think it is, which is an hour.
Has he heard of the Sunday roast?
As Biden.
Yeah,
for sure he has.
For sure, yeah.
He was shaking your hand the other time, wasn't he, when he, in that press conference, wasn't he?
He's a regular listener.
I've actually put it in the sat-nav. I've got it down. It's already in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, NW, yeah. Washington, D.C., 2500. So it's already in there.
We'll be heading there, and then we'll head to Ben's Creek on Tuesday night, and we will meet Adam in the hotel there on Tuesday night. And then on Wednesday morning, we will head for a site visit to Ben's Creek to examine the high wall miners. And they've talked about us going into the mine, which I have no wish to do.
We're going underground. In the words of Paul Weller, we're going underground, Kev.
We're going underground. We're going underground. Phil's going underground.
Kev's taking pictures.
Take pictures, and then on Thursday we'll head them back to New York, and there you go. So it's exciting. It's good crack, as the Irish say, and we'll see how it all pans out. Hopefully we're going to see a train full of coal. That would be good.
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
It would.
Zach, anything look forward to this short week?
Well, you can bring me my Christmas present, can't you?
That's what I was going to do. Yeah, I mean, I've already been out and I've got.
It's an early Christmas present for me. That's what I deserve, I think.
Do you like Squishmallows? And my daughter's got it. She's got this really big collection, and I've managed to find her one. So I don't know. I can bring you one of those back if you want. It's large, Gary.
I'm happy with the lump of coal. I mean, that's coal. Exactly what that's what I need. It solves the heating crisis as well. You know, it should last a month.
Eke it out.
Yeah, we actually have lumps of the gold from Conroy, the stuff that we knocked out ourselves from just by the stream. They said you can take as much of it as you want, so we brought a few pieces back. All that glitters is gold in this situation.
We actually watched, and I must put it on the link to this podcast, there was an RTE video, that was filmed in 2011, I think it was, so it's, 11 years old now, but it was when Conroy originally announced that the gold find, and it was really interesting seeing the locals take on it actually. So we watched that over a few sandwiches, and I don't think it's on the website anymore. I had a look the other day, but as I say, I'll try and get that out to shareholders because it's a very interesting watch.
Yeah, and the locals are all very much understanding that the gold is there, and their land can either be leased or sold. So I think, I don't think there's going to be issues with that. I think it's all coming together very nicely and should benefit everybody in the local area as well.
All right. On that note, should we wrap it up? Say goodbye. Have a great bank holiday weekend. Get some more of those 12-hour sleeps in because you're going to need it.
Yeah, I've got two more sleeps before the market opens. So I will be doing that. I'm literally sleeping like a baby. Or, the good way of sleeping like a baby, not a bad one.
Good.
There'll be some buyers of LFT on Tuesday onwards, I'm sure.
Excellent.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
Cheers.
All the best.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.